Hello, everyone. Welcome to Grad Chat by PhD Balance, where we talk about topics of grad school beyond academic research and that may be more difficult to talk about in our day-to-day lives. I'm your host, Aiden, and I'm the Digital Media Coordinator for PhD Balance. I'm currently in the process of mastering out of my PhD program in Geological Sciences at the University of Saskatchewan to pursue a different career path. But before going any further, I would like to pay respect and acknowledge that I occupy Treaty 6 territory, a traditional meeting ground, gathering place, and traveling route to the Cree, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, Dene, and Nakota Sioux nations. So if you missed it, we're now pre-recording episodes for release. All episodes are still available via video on our PhD Balance YouTube channel and via audio on all major streaming platforms. And don't forget to subscribe on your chosen platform to get notifications about new episodes. So our topic today is job searching without mentorship support. And I'm really excited to welcome our guest, Dr. Daniel Jeffries. Dan received a PhD in chemistry from Vanderbilt University in 2019. After which he did a postdoc at Harvard University. Although he is no longer in a fume hood, he has been able to find a career that keeps him close to the action and involved in his passions. Outside of work, Dan enjoys visiting new breweries, hiking and camping, and spending time with his fiance and cats. So we're so pleased to have you on Grad Chat, Dan, to discuss your experiences.
Awesome. Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. And then thank you for the introduction and thank you for the time on the podcast this morning.
Of course. Thank you for coming. Okay, so let's get into the meat and potatoes of this podcast. Should you tell your PI, supervisor, mentor that you're actively job hunting when you start?
Yeah, that's a very good question and something that I would actually talk about sort of all of the time with my peers. And I think for the duration of this podcast, it's probably helpful to think about two buckets. One bucket if you're a PhD student, another bucket if you're a postdoc, because sort of the levers that you can pull and the sort of power that you have that, you know, students might not realize they have is a little different for each situation. So I think starting with the grad student bucket, obviously first and foremost, like the degree will come before the job. I know a lot of employers, just state of the play today, you know, they're not going to take you before you earn that degree. And that degree can be the PhD, it can be the master's. Like, you just can't necessarily leave empty-handed, is what I'm saying. So to that end, and then keeping in mind, of course, this sort of classic power dynamic in grad school where your PI needs to sign off on your thesis, like, it can be a little challenging. I would not recommend telling your PI that you're searching for a job as a grad student until you've also had the conversation of like, this is my escape plan, as it were. You know, just a very candid conversation as a grad student, like, you know, either look, like, I'm killing it here. I have a dozen publications. I'm like rocking it. It's time for me to get my degree and move on. Or the opposite of like, you know, this isn't what I thought it was. Interested in exploring other opportunities. Let's like talk about, you know, getting a master's degree or some other event that signifies your time was well spent. I definitely don't recommend people, you know, tell their PI that they're getting a job, sort of ghost them and don't get anything for their time in grad school. And so we can talk about that more because that is a little vague. I think, you know, the TLDR, as a grad student, you know, the focus needs to be on the degree. As the postdoc, it's a much more sort of dynamic relationship and something that I really advocate for. Postdocs across all fields, you know, do need to understand they have a lot of power. And I mean, I would say, you know, day one as a postdoc with your PI, you let your PI know, if this is what you want, that you're here for a job.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people do their postdocs after 5-6 years of grad students, like you're giving this PI, you know, years or months of deferred salary, to put it crass, and also, you know, years of your life where you can be building experience in industry. And there needs to be a contract there where the PI is going to give you something in return. We're going to talk about publication record and letters of references and things like that. But, you know, I do take a little more of an aggressive approach, and I do want to enable people to feel that they have power, which is grad students and postdocs, you know, that's not instilled. You know, no one goes around campuses telling grad students and postdocs like they actually have power to make these decisions. And so, yeah, kind of, you know, hope I can be on this podcast today and sort of tell my story, tell the story of my peers, and show that there is power. So as a grad student, I would focus on the degree. As the postdoc, I would be career forward.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's really important, making sure that you have open communication and being very transparent. But you did say that you probably wouldn't tell someone that you're actively job hunting. And I guess that just retains your power. And I think it's instilled in us as grad students that we have no power, but we really do. And I think that's, it's really important to remind everyone of that. So you touched a little bit on the differences in moving forward as a grad student versus a postdoc, but how does it come to actually job hunting as either one of these grad students or postdocs?
I do think, you know, so I come from STEM, a chemistry degree, and maybe this is different in English or the arts or just areas that I'm not as familiar with. So keep in mind that this is for STEM, and then hopefully it's broadly applicable. But as a graduate student, like everyone who enters the job market is sort of PhD or master's degrees. You know, there are lots of jobs for bachelors, but there is sort of this psychology that where if you enter grad school, people might not want to hire you for a bachelor level job, if that makes sense. And I don't know if that stigma is changing, but that was sort of the stigma when I was looking at this maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So just something to keep in mind. And the way I think about it and the way I encourage other people to think about it is it is just sort of levers that you can pull and positioning for yourself. And the closer you are to PhD or master's, whatever that term or degree is for you, like that's one really big lever to pull. Now, I'll just give you a clear example. Like if you're a chemist and you want a job at Pfizer, they're not going to talk to you if you're 3 years away from getting your PhD. They will talk to you if you're 1 year away from getting your PhD. And so sort of how do you, you know, as a grad student, get comfortable with that timeline before approaching people who work at these companies that you want to also work at? And networking is a huge deal. But it's important to remember, like, that terminal degree is the real limiting reagent, if you will. Just because, you know, yeah. And then as a postdoc, it's a different story and it's a much more exciting story because, you know, if you don't want to go into academia, so if you're someone with an advanced degree who is super interested about all the things science can do besides teaching science to someone else, I mean, the postdoc is really your time to flourish. You know, full transparency, you know, we receive letters as postdocs where it says a 2 year kind of minimum stay, at least that's customary in STEM. That's a lie. Like you, no one needs to stay for those 2 years if they don't want to. I've seen postdocs leave, find successful positions in as short as 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, you know, those their puts and takes. And this is the part of sort of understanding like the power people have. You know, because you can leave your postdoc in 3 months, but then the put is that you're probably going to piss off, if I can say that live, you know, your PhD advisor and probably the postdoc advisor. And in my case, there was this funnel, right? So like my PI would send lots of people to this postdoc. So I had to keep in mind if I was going to leave early, I might damage that relationship for future students who could benefit. And so like really quickly, you kind of see how the job hunt is a little bit beyond you. But at the same time, it needs to be something you take very seriously, if that's helpful at all.
Yeah, you kind of need, it sounds like you just need to be looking forward a lot, and prepared to kind of battle those challenges as they come, I guess.
Yes.
And I really like the perspective of grad student looking versus postdoc, because it feels like what you're saying is that postdoc, it's basically a job. Like it's not like you're doing a degree anymore. Like you're not literally not doing a degree anymore. It should be treated as a job that you're already doing, and the extra levers that you can pull are just like any other job.
Yep.
This next question, when we're talking about publications, how important are they? And can you elaborate on how important they are if you're wanting a job in academia, or if you're considering going into industry, or maybe another subset in between? So how important are publications, and then elaborate for them?
Yes. So I never wanted to be in academia, right? Which is a very strange thing for someone with a PhD to say, I feel like. But I do know, at least again, this is STEM facing, but I think this is broadly applicable. Like if you do want to become a professor, you know, publication record is critical. I don't think that status quo has really changed. I still think that job market is very competitive. And one lever that people can pull to stand out, you know, is just like a rock star publication record. I will say in an industry and some of these, you know, quote unquote alternative careers, which I really like, hate that title for scientists. I mean, these are all careers. There's nothing alternative about any of them. I would say if you want to be, you know, in industry, and I'm thinking at like, you know, large pharma, for example, it's not so cut and dry. I mean, so I had, you know, three peers in grad school. I had, I think, you know, seven publications. I had a postdoc. I had a good friend with zero publications. He got a job right away, you know, in an industry, a very prestigious job. And then another who had four or five publications also got a very prestigious job. And so like, you know, what does that say? You know, obviously you want publications. I think that's a statement that's always going to be evergreen. Do they gate getting a job? No, unless you're diehard, like academic. Like if you in your heart of hearts know that you want to be a professor at a very like large reputable university, you're going to have to earn those publications, and you're going to have to do the, you know, tried and true academic marathon, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to stay in your PhD for a very long time. You got to postdoc for a very long time. You got to make your advisors very, very happy. Because, you know, that's the culture that you want to go into. And, you know, from what I've seen, the culture in, you know, large pharma, you know, industry, I sort of use those interchangeably, and then in the alternative careers is progressing so much more rapidly than in academia. For my current job, they did not even look at my publication record whatsoever. They don't even know if I have publications because I just sent in a resume, not a CV. And it's, you know, I think today is a very exciting time to be a scientist, and I definitely encourage people to shake off sort of the shackles of, you know, needing a dozen publications to get a job. You know, what it really comes down to is a very polished job talk where you give 30-50 minute presentation on what you've done. Like if you can nail that, if you can really convince people you have problem solving skills, if you're an expert in your field, if you know the technical intricacies, you know, publications at that point are just icing on the cake.
Absolutely. And I think we are heading into this new kind of age. So I have started my master's and I transferred up to PhD. So I've still kind of been like, I'm quite new to everything, but it feels I can really see that shift in changes in the importance in publications and versus the importance of like the science communication and education and kind of like outreach side is becoming more important. And it depends on what university you're at, of course, but I see a lot more professors kind of valuing those other skills, what might be called like your soft skills or your technical skills, but to be able to present to someone and have your like hard and fast 10 to 15 minute presentation and be a very good communicator to an audience, you know, tons of people can work on a paper. You might not have even written one full paragraph in that paper, honestly, once it's gone through all its edits, but to be able to pull together a presentation and communicate to an audience, I see a lot more people showing interest in that, specifically in my university and a few other universities that I collaborate with, and really valuing that. So that whole like publish or perish mindset is, I think, hopefully slowly decreasing in academia. Like, of course, the importance is all about what you can share to the world. So in the end, a lot of it will be, you will still have to put publications out there, hopefully, to share your science. But I've seen a lot of negative reactions from older scientists who did publish or perish in their days, and seeing that shift, they're like, but I suffered, now you need to suffer. It's like, exactly. We're shifting, everything's shifting. And I also wanted to touch on something that you mentioned earlier about how depends on what kind of field you're getting into, but like a master's might be too much, a PhD might be too much. I think it really depends on what field you're going into, because in geology, a master's is almost like overqualifying you if you're wanting to get like a field-based or exploration-based job. Your master's, PhD, definitely. If you're doing postdoc, you're almost like putting yourself into a position of academia, where I had peers in chemistry, for example, who master's was like bare minimum that you could have. And that definitely affects your job hunting and kind of pigeonholing yourself, or not pigeonholing yourself, into what type of job that you can actually get.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully if anyone listens to this and is kind of master PhD, I hope I don't give them anxiety because yeah. Absolutely, to your point, like I know in engineering, like a master's is the pinnacle degree, yeah. You know, PhD and postdoc in engineering, and, you know, someone hopefully can correct me later if I'm wrong, but like, that's just too much. And then for a PhD, it really is, people think of it as bachelor or PhD. Yeah. Like I haven't seen a lot of people give value to a master's. But then again, like I've had peers who've mastered out of their chemistry programs and then gotten very nice jobs, gotten the same job that you can get with a PhD. Yeah. So times are changing
and it's, yeah. So when you were job searching, did you run into any issues or problems in your endeavors?
Yeah, I mean, so I, you know, hopefully my story can help some people. So I was a grad student, I was just straight up overworked, right? And I was coming into lab 7 days a week. Like I knew I was about to graduate. My PI, fortunately, is very very good at getting his students out to the next step. And so that was huge. I mean, I got out with my PhD. I didn't have to battle him. I didn't have to like chase him around the hallways for his signature. You know, but the sort of counter to that was, I think I worked 28 out of every 30 days or something like that. And yeah, and that's just what you, that was the puts and takes. You get out early, but you work a lot. And so he just sort of told me I was going to postdoc. And, you know, my PI is a super busy guy. Like I was interested in the idea of a postdoc. I obviously wanted to try and enter industry first, like at least wanted to try and interview, right? You know, but it was still very much like, this is my PI saying like, this is going to be good for you. Just do it. And I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I didn't want to argue with him. And at the same time, like this was a really good postdoc. Like who am I to say no? I want to gamble
put in front of you, like, right. Yeah.
And so, you know, honestly, like going back in time, I don't think I would have done anything different. I think I was in a very fortunate position, but some people would have wanted to push back and say like, no, I actually don't want this. And then, you know, what you have to be ready for there is the chance that you don't land a job and that postdoc would have walked away. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think I wish this country wasn't this way, but like a lot of success does come down to chance, right? And so like, this was just a point in the game of life where I could have gambled and said, hey, no, actually I want to start my career. I don't want to do this postdoc. But I took the postdoc and job hunting there was sort of it started as a comedy of errors because I didn't know what I was doing and I was sort of making a lot of mistakes. So my strategy was to like show up, just kill it, like get something done as quickly as possible. Whether it be enough for like a patent or a publication or just like a couple of really nice slides for a job talk and then start job searching.
I see.
And so that's what I did. Like my PI told me like, hey, this would be a successful postdoc. I asked it up front. It took me about 3 months to do that. And then I told him, hey, I'm job hunting. And he got really upset, understandably, because what I never did, you know, day one, I asked him what would make this a successful postdoc. He told me I did it, but then we never had the conversation of like, what is your expectation of me, like of me, not of like what's the next step in this project. Of course, so he was very traditional. He wanted there 2 years, and he fortunately knew I was job searching, but didn't treat me any differently.
Oh, good.
And I know that's not always the case. And I'm trying to think of an example of one that would not be the case. And as I'm racking my memory, you know, again, this is still some of like the teaching that I have in me of like postdocs, they have no power. Quite a lot of people as postdocs were sort of actively job searching and their PIs did not fire them. Their PIs did not like treat them any differently. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually pretty encouraging as I remember this.
Yeah, that's great. Cause you think of any other career, if you're planning to leave the company or planning to leave your current job, like your supervisor, boss, anyone is going to be like, well, what do I owe you? Like,
right.
Like you're planning to leave us. So what's the point? So that's very encouraging to hear that you had a good experience. And yeah. As you think about it more, other people did as well.
Yeah. And I 100% do not recommend like flagging this around, right? You know, the fact that you're
it like every right, day,
you know, the fact that you're job hunting, like I think just to have a candid single conversation with your PI about what you yep. want, that's critical. I would not talk about this to your lab mates. I did not talk about this to my lab mates.
No.
Because certain labs are more competitive than others and you don't necessarily want to give, you know, this information out as much as it sucks, as much as like I had lab mates, they're also job hunting. I'm like, I just wasn't in a secure enough place to help you because this is a very competitive environment.
Yes.
And like, if you go and tell my PI, like that I'm leaving lab in the middle of the day to like go on interviews and stuff, I don't know what those repercussions are going to be.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's you know, doesn't make me feel good, right? That's a lot of like slinking around. But you know, that's sort of what I had to do. And I shouldn't say slinking around.
But it is like kind of going what may not be like commonly looked at as like good to do, maybe, is going right. on a job interview halfway through your day.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, just because think of how taboo that is. Like I was a morning person. So I would get up in the morning. I would do my work before most people showed up into lab, right? Most people showed up for me like 9 or 10. Now I've been there for 5 hours. Yeah. At that point, basically I would leave like 10 to 2 when everyone is sort of there. So like optically, you know, yeah. I was in hot water. But I think, you know, that is just something, you know, the way I think about my postdoc, it was 1/3 job hunting, 2/3 actually postdocing. Okay. And so it was sort of a, you know, a full-time job on top of it. But yeah, I think, you know, where people would get in hot water is if job hunting actually started to affect the quality of their work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, if you're able to, and it should certainly be the expectation for yourself, both as a grad student and as postdoc, like job hunting, it should not decrease the quality of what you're putting out, because then your PI is going to care.
Yes.
And then your PI is going to start, you know, maybe micromanaging or being a little more intense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I can kind of relate to that. When I came out telling my supervisors that I was planning to master out and quit my PhD program, they were like, okay, oh, panic. Like, what's the fastest way we can get you out? And I'm like, no, I want to do quality work and I want to have a master's at the end. They thought I was just going to quit completely. And I was like, no, I want to actually master out and be able to have something to show for this. So I think they were almost surprised that me making this decision wasn't going to just say, okay, I'm completely done. And just like job searching, it shouldn't be like an all or nothing thing. You have to kind of incorporate it into your life. Mm-hmm. So I hear you say that you weren't talking to your lab mates about this, but who did you go to for support? Did you have a support system around you, other peers maybe, or did you kind of stick to outside your school circle?
Yeah, absolutely. And support system is just critical. It can mean so many things to so many people. Obviously, you know, I had some lab mates from grad school, and a couple of these folks at this point were in industry, right? Because they had gotten jobs when I had gone to post-sec. So I had them. I actually had a fairly easy time just messaging people on LinkedIn. Yep. You know, I found someone who like has like a title, you know, like a chemistry role at some company that I was interested in. You send them a message. And when I was in the Boston area, so it is a little privilege because it is such a biotech hub, but I was able to just go and get coffee with these people, chat about their jobs, build a network. You know, from that, I kind of have like a longtime mentor that has taught me a lot. And it's just because essentially a cold message on LinkedIn. And eventually you just find people who really want to help. And one of the most, you know, positive things I can say about like the scientific community, there's such a huge drive to pay it forward, you know, because almost everyone here went through grad school in some capacity. I think very few people actually enjoyed it. And then, you know, so many people want to help and give back. And so you can certainly find that. I strongly recommend, you know, reach out to people on LinkedIn. Obviously have, you know, a number of questions for them. Just so the discussion isn't like, hey, you know, I'm in grad school, I don't really know what to do, can you help me? You know, then the person you reach out to is kind of, you know, what can they really do? But yeah, if you have like, hey, I see you're at, you know, company X, but you were in, you know, this lab a couple of years ago, like how is it transitioning? You know, what would you do differently? Just sort of, you know, like directive questions like that can really help. And then therapy, I think, you know, just being able to talk to someone, because like, you know, you get into such a place, at least to me, it's like, okay, I got to wake up, got to work, got a job hunt. Yeah. Like
your brain is like,
yeah, you sort of, you know, kind of forget that you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
Or at least, gosh, you know, yeah, that's yeah, when I was, and like, well, I need to sort of calm down, you know, talk to a professional. And at least I know at the universities that I was at, there was a couple of free counseling sessions. So I definitely recommend people check out their, you know, local campus, you know, mental health institute, whatever they name it, because these things seem to be named a lot of things.
They're all different. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously I know a lot of students, at least stateside, have health insurance. So check that. And then also check for, therapy programs have like intern offices for the folks who are trying to like get their degrees in therapy. Mm-hmm. And you can usually have talk therapy with those intern hours for at discounted prices, because these are grad students in their own right.
Yeah.
You know, training, and that's where the reduced rate comes from. So I know as a grad student for me, as a postdoc, even like trying to afford therapy on my salary was a choice. Okay. Between that and groceries. Mm-hmm. So some campuses do have free. I would check out those sort of therapist intern hours, and then also what your insurance covers. Talking out LinkedIn,
yeah,
and then friends who are not in your lab.
Yeah. Awesome. I really like that point of networking, and I do want to get back to that point in just a few minutes. I want to talk a little bit more about the specifics of job hunting first. Mm-hmm. Because this is all about job hunting without your mentor support. So you are battling this on your own, probably for the most part. So, okay, so you found a job, you've applied for it. They ask for references. The person who has been mentoring you for the last 2-3 years is your postdoc, or is your postdoc supervisor or PI mentor of some sort. Do you ask them for a letter? Can you ask them for a letter? I mean, I guess if you've been open communication, they're probably expecting it, honestly, but what's your take on that?
Yeah, I personally did not.
You didn't, okay.
I did not ask my PI for a letter of recommendation. I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. So, you know, in a non-postdoc and non-grad student world, like for me now, I have the right, if I were to be interviewing for another company, to ask them, do not contact my current employer. Yeah. And this right, for whatever reason, seems to be gone in academia. At least that's what I was told. That's what my peers are told. Like, your PI has absolute control over, like, where you go and what you do. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know, because it's not like that anywhere else for anyone. And so what I did as a postdoc was I just used my PhD committee for my three letters of reference. You know, what do you do as a grad student when they ask you for letters of recommendation? That is a little trickier. I know some people have, like my committee was only three people. I know in some universities, committees are larger than three, so you might be able to pick three of those. But at the end of the day, like, you know, someone, especially if you're going into academia, is going to ask your PI, like, hey, like, what's up with Dan? Like, yeah. Are they a good student? Like, and so, you know, that would need to be approached with a little, with just the conversation ahead of time. You want to tell your PI as a grad student, like, hey, there's going to be a request for a letter coming in. And what you can do then, like, I've heard horror stories of these people, like, because you know, I've heard horror stories of PIs getting a request for a letter and then just like with a Sharpie, they just write no and yeah. like send it. You know, and I've never actually seen this happen. This is all hearsay. I don't think it bodes any PI well to trash talk their own student. I think it's a bluff. Yeah. You know, that being said, I wouldn't put it past the PI to be like, you know, this student is middle of the road, and then that can hurt your chances. And so one thing, like, you know, the whole publisher perish, we talked about this earlier. I think it's important for grad students. It's critically important for the PIs because they're the ones perishing if they don't publish, not you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can sort of use that power dynamic to your advantage. You know, if your project is going well, like, hey, look, there's this letter that's going to be coming in. You know, by the way, I just got this really exciting result, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I want this done. And it's, you set the stage like that. So you make them think like, oh, wow, this is a really good student.
Yeah.
And it's totally okay. Also, as a grad student, you know, even if we have a result that's like 3 months old, if it's really exciting, if we haven't told anyone yet, I would honestly sit on it until you need to,
when you need to
play
it.
This card, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of like a game you might have to play. But yeah, because you know, my PI, both in grad school and postdoc, they'd always ask for updates like every day. And so if I had like a killer day when I learned a bunch of stuff, I wouldn't tell them everything right away, right? You'd sort of space it out over time.
Yeah.
besides the point, but it is a useful tactic to sort of make your PI think that you're, you know, always doing something, which is of course impossible. You know, nobody can, you know, be a star student 7 days a week.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you didn't ask your PI for a reference letter, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it if you have that good relationship with them too. But of course, different for everyone. How long did it take for you to find a job, if you don't mind me asking, slash what's kind of like a general timeline of anyone finding a job?
Yeah, and so my timeline was not gated by needing a PhD, and you know, that, or the master's, whatever terminal degree it is that you're going for, because then it gets a little complicated kind of way after your PI. I think as a postdoc, you have a lot more freedom.
Oh.
That being said, you know, because the post, like, you can leave whenever. Yeah, I literally showed up into my PI's office, gave him my 2 weeks' notice. and it, that was it.
And you were out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think from the time I sent in my first application to the time I actually like signed an offer, it was about 8 months.
Okay.
I would say it was about 8 months. And a lot of, you know, a lot of applications, you're just never going to hear back. You're never going to hear a response. And that's kind of frustrating. And then a lot of that was, you know, getting into like round one interviews, round two interviews, but like not getting the offer. And that's like tough and something to kind of like build up a stomach for. Sort of dealing with that rejection, because at least I sort of felt like I was not playing it safe, right? I mean, because I was going out and I was networking with people like during lab hours, even though I was getting lab done, like all these optically things that people kind of side-eyeing. And I wasn't getting the results as quickly as would have made me feel comfortable. So yeah, it can be harrowing. yeah, it's important to remember that everyone goes through it. And to be prepared for rejection, because it will come.
Yeah. And within 8 months, like that's probably a lot of different applications, interviews. Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if that even went longer for some people. So, okay, that's a good timeline. I mean, I have no clue what the timeline was like. So yeah, that definitely puts it into perspective. What did you do for like self-care during those times? You mentioned therapy.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, going back in time, I wish I could have done more. you know, I did have therapy about once a month, again, because budget concerns.
Expensive, yeah.
You know, I was super fortunate, and not everyone gets this, but I was able to take most weekends off while in postdoc. Right. Taking weekends off in grad school was not necessarily an option every weekend for me. And so, you know, do simple things, play video games, you know, cook, really big into baking. My fiance and I, sorry, were doing distance at that point. So she would come up on weekends. That was just great to see her. Yeah, because especially, I mean, I left Nashville where the PhD was to go to Boston. And then when you do that, I think one thing, a lot of PhD or students who move on to postdocs in new cities sort of don't take stock in is like how hard that can be to sort of leave your network behind. Yeah. And so at least if I would have had known how hard that was going to be, I could have prepared myself a little bit better. But that did sort of, that came as a shock. I got a cat. having a cat helps a lot. But yeah, I think just it's, you know, for me, just cooking dinner for myself was a big deal. You know, being able to like, hey, like I'm going to do this one thing today. It's going to be nice. And that's like a huge victory. Yeah, and it's also a huge victory that I don't have to work today. And, you know, getting myself to a place where like, it's okay if I do one thing productive today.
Yeah.
It was a really nice just sort of self-care mentality.
Great. No, I love that. Okay. Before we wrap up, I really want to talk about networking because I'm huge advocate for networking, but COVID times have made that very difficult. Conferences, at least in Canada, are kind of still not a thing. I've heard about some conferences happening in person in the United States, but not a ton in my field that I'm in right now. So what would you recommend as a networking pathway, because you know you mentioned just like cold calling on LinkedIn, but like what else would there be for people looking for jobs outside of academia?
Yeah, I mean, I would, like, it's never too late to start building your like lateral network, so your peers that you have now, I mean, because these people can go off and do things. and so like, you know, that's a really easy place to start, I think, just to reconnect with someone who, you know, maybe they're in your program, maybe they graduated just like a year or two ago, just reconnecting with them, asking how it's going. And then building up from there, there's a number of online virtual career fairs and recruiting events for big companies. Cool. So I think, you know, again, this is a STEM focused thing, but Massachusetts has the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council, and they do a ton of like online virtual career fairs and sort of like 40-minute seminars of like, what is this industry, geared towards job searchers. And every state has their own biotechnology council or something similar. Okay. And yeah, just going to that venue virtually could be really helpful. And even if you don't live in Massachusetts, you can still virtually attend these events.
Okay, that's really cool.
So I bring that up because I don't, you know, the way life sciences is set up in the States, it's localized in certain places on the coasts. And Boston is huge, and the Massachusetts Biotechnology Council, or MassBio for short, has a ton of good resources, and it's most of them are free. The only ones that aren't free are these like weekend long intensive courses, but yeah. And then some, you know, one career that a lot of advanced degree folks think about is consulting. And the really big consulting firms will have a ton of virtual recruiting events, because the hiring process for these like cream of the crop consulting firms, it's very paved. It's very structured. It's like taking the ECT all over again. Okay. It's very much like a standardized exam, and they have seminars about what is consulting, you know, how do you, you know, prep and pass the standardized exam. And yeah, so I would, you know, again, sorry for rambling, I would encourage people to check out their like local biotechnology council state sites. If one does not exist, you can check out MassBio. And then if you have like an industry, you can sort of ask around, like, you know, who is like a good consultancy? Who's a good pharma company to be an MSL for? Who's a good, you know, pharma company to be a, like a discovery scientist? And then if you go to those companies' pages, more often than not, they're going to have recruiting information.
Okay.
That can be helpful to read. And yeah.
One thing I remember about conferences is I was always seeing the same faces. You recognize the same faces mm-hmm. all the time. One thing that now with COVID times and everything being online is I'm really recognizing names a lot more. And it's nice to put faces to names that you often see it at the conferences, and now you're seeing them online and you see all these names. But even like you attend one webinar or seminar and you see the same person coming all the time, you know, that's maybe someone good to connect with. Even just sending them, you know, cold messaging them on LinkedIn and saying, hey, I noticed you attend these webinars, like you work for this company, you know, do you have an affiliation with this council or organization? Because I really enjoy taking in like webinars and local conferences, because that's where you're gonna kind of be meeting people who will hopefully kind of take you on that journey moving forward.
Yeah. And conferences is a great point. I totally forgot that. Yeah. So yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah, conferences are different at this time in our lives now, though. So students are definitely grad students, undergrad students, everyone is definitely taking them in differently and getting very different things out of them than they used to, I think. Okay, Dan, before we finish up, is there anything else you'd like to mention or talk about that we didn't get to today?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, what can I recap here? it's certainly okay to be very stressed about this, I think. I mean, I was, because, you know, my PI during my postdoc would have been totally content if I stayed there for life. And so like I had to do something to sort of get up, because that's just not what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just taking, you know, the time out of the day, you know, taking that energy to network. And then in that 8 months from when I sort of first started applying to getting the job, but also changed careers for all intents and purposes, right? You know, I'm no longer doing chemistry in a business development role. So that basically means, you know, learning about new, you know, drugs and development, and then trying to determine like, are these going to be successful or not? And so a huge shift in skill set that I was able to do because I found a really good mentor who taught me during that COVID lockdown. So you know, a lot of it, you know, it's really those conversations. So I'll sort of end it on this, like in investment banking, you know, they take 100 calls a day because you never know which one is going to be important. Sort of like this analogy. And I think that's true for job searching as a grad student, like just have as many conversations as you can, because you really don't know which one is going to lead into something cool. And so I would definitely encourage people to like send that LinkedIn mail, you know, attend that conference, you know, go grab that coffee, catch up with that old friend, you know, ask a question, because most of them are just going to be fizzled out, but you really never know which one is going to lead into like a lifelong sort of mentor or job opportunity. And so, yeah, you know, things kind of manifest in mysterious ways. PhDs, postdocs, like there's a lot more power that you have than we're taught. And yeah, keep that in mind.
Yeah, we encourage you to use that power. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this has been Grad Chat by PhD Balance. Our episodes are now posted simultaneously on our podcast and YouTube channel on Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. To find our podcast episodes, just search Grad Chat on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcast. You can connect with us with PhD Balance on our website at phdbalance.com or on social media on Twitter and Instagram at PhD_balance. Until next time. Bye and take care of yourself.